good morning, everyone, and a freilichen lach b'ayim. May we have the hesiris of this day. May it open up vistas for us. While I'm going to be giving the parsha shir today, and Be'ez Hashem will have the shir lamdas on Thursday, it might seem like routine parsha, but I'm sure the ma'iras of the day will open things up, Be'ez Hashem. So with no further ado, I want to feel the pulse of the parsha, to have a sense where narratives fit right in. It's not so simple to understand parshas Behar B'chukaisai, how Shemitah fits into the greater Vayikra narrative, the conclusion to Vayikra. Yeah, we could say in a general sense, Vayikra is a sacred about Kedusha and Kadshim, and this mitzvah of Shemitah relates to Kedusha Sa'aretz, but in a more specific sense, we want to get that pulse. And the Ramban really addresses this question. The Ramban grapples with why the Torah talks about Shemitah here. And he quotes the opinion of the Ibn Ezra, which he discards with, maybe that's too strong a word, rejects very quickly, as he oftentimes does. The Ibn Ezra believes this is really not the place for it. But because Sefer Vayikra is going to finish with Brachas and Teichacha, and the Teichacha of Parshas Behar to a large degree deals with dereliction in Shemitah and Yovel leads us to be banished from the land, so the Torah puts Shemitah and Yovel here Agav Orcha. Ramban doesn't like that. He does not want to believe Shemitah and Yovel are here kind of just Agav Orcha. The Ramban takes a step back and gives us what I'll call a meta perspective of how the story evolved in the Mishnah. At the time of Ma'an Torah, along with the Aseres HaDibros, Bnei Yisrael were presented with the Eila HaMishpatim, the mitzvahs of Parshas Mishpatim. And then Moshe went up to receive Luch HaShneis, and everything should have been fine and dandy. What happened? Moshe broke the Luchos due to the Eigel. It was not fine and dandy, to say the least. And Matan Torah had to be redone with Luch HaShneis. And Hashem reviewed some of those mitzvahs of Parshas Mishpatim. You'll notice this at the end of Parshas Kisista. With Luch HaShneis, he reviewed some of those Mishpatim mitzvahs, as the Ramban terms it. The mitzvahs chamuros, the very weighty mitzvahs of Mishpatim, Baser V'chalav, Avodah Zarah, are reviewed at the end of Parshas Kisista. Says the Ramban, he also did something else. One of the mitzvahs of Parshas Mishpatim was Shemitah and Yovel. Shemitah at least. There was a quick one-off reference in Parshas Mishpatim to Shemitah. Well, Hashem said, now, the second time around, I want to give Shemitah in detail. And he relayed to Moshe Parshas Behar, the Pratim, the details of Shemitah. And he said, this second bris, I want to have this added feature of the details, certainly of Shemitah, and also I'm going to create brachas and anshin. There's going to be an issue of consequence here for the second bris. Now, it's readily understandable why the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted consequences the second time around, and specifically the second time around. You know, the first time around, we were living in this ideal world. We love Hashem, we're committed to Hashem, we don't need carrot and stick. Would be my interpretation. And Hashem just relates the mitzvahs without consequence. That's not the focus, right? The second time around, after Egel and going astray, you know, when a child's an offender, Nebuch, right? Nebuch, that's when unwanted consequences, which is really what it's never about. It's a tool, right? Discipline is necessary. I'm suggesting that Pratim details, being very specific this time around, at least with the laws of Shemitah, is related to that. You know, in a perfect world, you can focus on the big picture, the tachas, right? But, you know, in a world where things have to be very disciplined, you got to focus on the devil and the details, leave no room for ambiguity. You know, in general, details are much more mitzad, midas ha-gvura, midas ha-tip. Midas ha-chesed is creativity, big picture. When you're very, very specific, right? Accountants and bookkeepers are more, hope not to offend anyone, are more the disciplined midas ha-gvura type, right? Not the artistic side. So this time around, after Chada Egel, we're an imperfect people, we're more in that Midas HaDin mode. So these, at least vis-a-vis Shemitah, detailed, focused along with the Onch, the Brachos, and the Klaus. And the Rabban basically says that when Moshe came down and presented them with the second Luchos in the Mishkan, the Jewish people got so inspired, enraptured with Mishkan, they took the Mishkan and they ran with it, right? And the Mishkan was built, and you had the Nevuahs of Ayikra and Mishkan, and Moshe's like, we've got to finish this one off. I never relate to the people, the details of Shemitah, so, and the Brachos and the Klaus, and they have to be woven in here in Parshas Bahar B'chukos. It seems to me, Rabban doesn't say this explicitly, I am interpreting a bit, but the Rabban is satisfied now with the presence of the details of Shemitah and Yovel and the Brachos and the Klaus here in Sefer Vayikra. Because Sefer Vayikra is really dealing with, especially in the Rabban Lashitaso, it's dealing with the perpetuation of Matan Torah for all time, as he explained in Parshas Truma. The Mishkan perpetuates the Mishkan, and according to Chazal, perpetuates Matan Torah, I apologize. Shekhinah, the Shekhinah of Har Sinai in accessible form day in, day out. And according to Chazal, it particularly gives us an access through Hashem even after Chada Egel in a world of Kapara. So finishing off the bricks with everything that came with cut, let's do this over again, take two, right? Perpetuating Matan Torah, especially with the take twos and the kapara for Egel in a world of Mishkan, well, the pratim of Shemitah and Yovel, that focus on the devil, the details, and I have to be very, very specific with you, I can't trust you, I gotta be on all of that, that relates to the general theme of Vayikra in the Ramban's judgment. I'll point out, though this might be a bit technical, but it's precious to me nonetheless, this perspective that as much as Vayikra is, in general, the laws of Mishkan, the laws of Kadshim, there was, call it a parenthetical importance to weave in Shemitah and Yovel at the end, as the Rambam is explaining, because it reflects the details of Shemitah and Yovel, because it reflects the second bris. I think this will go a long way to explain the rhythm of the narrative at the end of Parshas B'chukos. The Torah does something very, very strange. After the brachas and the taychachah, it says, "Eila ha'edus v'hachukim asher tziva Hashem har Sinai," which, as the Ramban explains, means this is the end of the second covenant, the final covenant of Har Sinai. What's the Torah then do? It should pull the curtain. You know, when a speaker gives his grand finale, you're like, "You're done." Now, when a speaker says, "No, no, no, addendum," and immediately throws everyone, well, that's exactly what the Torah does. After that final closing sentence after the brachos and the klaus, right? Eila ha'ed. No. Addendum. Let me tell you the laws of Erchin, the laws of being Makdish, and how you're going to utilize the Yovel framework now to be poda things, right? You want to be poda what you bought from Hakdish before Yovel and so on. And then if you say, and Eila ha'metzus achet siva Hashem har Sinai, right? The Torah creates an addendum, the laws of Erchin, and the organized thing would have been put Erchin in Parshas Bahar along with Shemitah and Yovel, along with all the other halachas of buying back fields and the like within the Yovel structure, deal with Pinyan Hekdesh within the Yovel structure, and then have the brachas and the klaus in that final salvo, Eila, right? Why? Brachas calls Eila, closure, and then addendum, the walls of Erchin, right? It's an obvious question of the Pshut HaShemekra, and many, many Pshutim have been said, most of them don't satisfy it.
I know you've said many times in the past that if you look at the Chumashim, the absence of Chumash, well, really, it's Chashmos, Vayikra, and Bamidbar, they always end off on a high note of mitzvah or din. So ending off on the Baruch Sukkolos, acting off on the Teichla, and the Yeshua from it, would not be that same kind of ending.
Very good. I hear that, Achshava. I was thinking like this. There's a literary device that if you don't want to finish off on a tangent, right? You want the end of a sefer to be in line with the overall theme, and sure, a parenthetical narrative is exactly that, parenthetical. Because Vayikra is really Torah's Kohanim, the Ramban's giving side reason why Shemitah and Yovel and the brachas and the kolos have to be given here. It's the end of the second bris, right? Jewish people kind of rushed the project a little bit and immediately got into Mishkan before Moshe had time to finish off the second bris. So the divine of HaKadosh Baruch Hu said like this, I'm going to take the part of the Shemitah and the Yovel narrative, which is Kudshim, which is Karbanos. And what's that? The laws of Erchin and redeeming a field that you're playing. The laws of Berakabai is in the Shemitah and Yovel narrative. You hear what I'm saying? And I'm going to put that at the end. I'll make a separate sub-narrative of it, right, as an addendum. So then it's ending with that whole, the overall Kudshim focus, and that's what was bifurcated. That's just a precious Tamip shot explanation for the seemingly hanging pause. I'm done, brachas kolos eila, and no, oh, I forgot, as though I forgot Erchin. There are no divine forgetful oops mishaps. Who was that politician who had his oops moment that fried him forever? Do you remember that, Gabriel? I remember. Texas, Rick Perry. Oh. Yeah, I remember the presidential debate. They asked him a question, and he said oops first, and in the unforgiving political world, the guy was fried forever, right? Never. I think maybe he could be an energy secretary or something later, like, you know, right? The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't have oops moments. There has to be a cheshbon. That's my suggestion. I'm sure there are other mahalach. Beyond technicality, now I want to understand really concept. Why is it that when the Ribbono Shel Olam in the second bris according to the Ramban after Ego wants to be detailed focused, I got to be devil in the details, right? In this devilish world of Ego, people go off, I got to be very detail focused. I get it. But why detail-oriented specifically regarding Shemitah? He could have been detail-oriented regarding any of the Mishpatim Mitzvahs. Now it is true, the Medrash which Rashi cites at the beginning of the parasha says, in fact, the details of all Mitzvahs were said in that narrative of Sinai. The Torah is only explicitly mentioning the Pratim of Shemitah, but he really did it with vis-a-vis all the Mitzvahs. Right? We have to understand why the one highlighted in the text, why Shemitah, why the devil in the detail focus explicit in the text vis-a-vis Shemitah. Now, you understand. The notion that Shemitah will serve as the stellar example that even details were related to the original Har Sinai rather than later. That must have something to do with the many, many clues of connection between Shemitah and Yovel and Har Sinai, which are very precious this time of year in terms of connecting Shavuos, Habalei, Olotayva, and Parshas Bahar in this non-coincidental confluence of Parshas Bahar and pre-Shavuos. There are so many correlations, right? The whole count of Shemitah and Yovel. Usafar Talacha, you're supposed to count X amount of years till you reach Yovel, the term Sfira. And how many Shemitah cycles are counted? 7 Shemitah cycles, and a 7 times 7, right? Sphira, the term Sphira, 7 times 7, 49. One case days and one case years. And then what is blown on day 5, on year 50 of Yovel? A shofar, right? Of course, in Torah, a shofar was blown. And what is that 50th year when you blow the shofar called Yovel, when the term Yovel last appear in the Chumash? At Matan Torah, B'mshoch B'keren HaYovel. And you have other midrasha connections, really staring right at us once you realize them and integrate them within this tapestry we're weaving. For example, when Medrash calls Shomei Shemitah Gibore Koch, I'll say Tvar L'Shma B'Kol Tvar. Where else do we find that term Gibore Koch, heroes of spirit? Chazal used that terminology in Mitzvah Kali Yisrael when they said Nasa V'Neshma, because that pasuk of the heroic Gibore Koch says Osei Tvar L'Shma B'Kol Tvar, Nasa V'Neshma. And you also have a Rus shout-out in our parasha. All of Megillus Rus, the Megillah of Shavuos, is really about fulfilling the mitzvah in our parasha of a next of kin redeeming a field. That's exactly what happened, right? Impoverished Naomi and Rus have to sell their field, and the next of kin ends up being Boaz, steps in. This is not a coincidence that Geulas Krovin is the Rus story, is the Bahar story, it's this time of year. So certainly this all points to Mayan and Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. Well, they are very connected. The question is, on a deeper level, why? And why the devil in the detail focus regarding Shemitah specifically? And I'll also add the question, according to the simple read, the details were set at Har Sinai. right? People misunderstand that Chazal. People think it's telling us that even the details are divine, are Messina. That's not what it's saying. Of course, any detail in the Torah comes from Hashem. What's being stressed here is, don't think Hashem, as Rashi says, don't think Hashem first told him the details of Shemitah and the other mitzvahs. Later, 40 years later, know that he said it at Har Sinai. And we have to understand why it's thematically so significant. Hashem told him the details of Shemitah and by extension other mitzvahs at Har Sinai. Why it's so important the way. So all of these issues will come to light, I think. We'll shed light on them when we have a deeper understanding of what Shemitah and Yad Vashem are. So let me develop for you as follows.
Rabbi Moshe didn't write down all the mitzvahs that he was given.
Well, at some point he did. At some point he did. We could talk about the structure of how and when based on the 2 days in the Gemara and Gittin. But my point is it's apparently critically relevant to know Shemitah, the Farish in the text, and then Drash, all the mitzvahs, the details go back to Sinai. Hashem did not first tell him them in, let's say, Arvus month. So let's understand Shemitah as follows. Shemitah, Shabbos, Haaretz Vashem. Shabbos is not only an experience in days commemorating creation, but it's also experienced vis-a-vis the land. And on a very human level, Shabbos, rest, with all the connotation of coming to an end, right? Bask and achieve. That's what Shabbos is. Shabbos is the end. Kol Malach Chasui. In the land. The land, the home sweet home connotation. Eretz Yisrael is a place which we associate with the end. I'm home, right? Home bathed, right? This whole galus is really, Hashem oriented, the whole galus cool experience really surrounding the land. The land is that elusive home sweet home. And the fact that Shabbos, the menucha, in terms of Shemitah, is experienced in the land, coalesces together this way. And I would suggest the fact that in the grander Yovel structure, there are two major rectifications that happen in Yovel. Slaves are freed, and land, Ahuz and Artsar, returns to their original owner. It has a lot to do with this greater Golos concept. When you think about the original Golos, which is Golos Mitzrayim, we were Avodah. So when a Jew is a slave again and have an entry, in a certain sense, he's back in Mitzrayim, right? Horrible state. A Jew is not supposed to be there. And we've traced in the past many clues of connection between the story of an Eved Ivri and Galus Mitzrayim. In his sense, it's personal Galus Mitzrayim. For example, the Torah says in this week's Parsha, you better let the Eved go because ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim, right? Li b'nei Yisrael avadim bo avadim la avadim. A Yid is an Eved Hashem, not an Eved to another human being. That's the horrible predicament of an Eved Ivri. Well, Chazal said that pasuk was uttered at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim. When Hashem passed over the lintel on the doorpost of Mitzrayim, he said, "Ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim bo avadim la avadim."
That's what gets his ear.
And that's what we pierce his ear, the Gemara says, in front of the doorpost. So the pasuk in our parsha regarding an Eved Ivri is really Yitzias Mitzrayim, think of pasuk. He's in Mitzrayim again. And I've theorized in the past that is why the slave is called an Eved Ivri. It's a very strange term, Ivri. It's a very strange term. The term Ivri is used to describe our national family in Parshas Gracious in Mitzrayim, but after Yitzias Mitzrayim, you don't really find Kol Yisrael called Ivrim again in the Chumash, right? As much as in the post-Zionist world, the term Hebrew became very, very common, right? Strictly speaking, in Chumash, the term describes the original family. When we're a nation leaving Mitzrayim and receiving Torah, we're not Ivrim anymore. You know why? Ivri, Hebrew, and on a level of pshat, that reflects the familial origin. Ivri, we are either from the other side of the river, or we are the descendant of Avar. That's when we're a family, that's when we're a clan. B'nai Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, Ha'eda, when we live in Mitzrayim, we're born as a nation, as the Pesukim and Chazal. We're not really called Ivri. There's only one time in all of Torah where a Yid is called an Ivri again, that's an Eved Ivri. The pattern is clear. Yeah, he's back to Mitzrayim. When we were called Ivri.
When Yona calls himself an Ivri?
Huh?
When Yona calls himself an Ivri?
Ah, you know, Sam, notice I was like, I said a chumash. I know two cases in Yom where we're called Ivri. One in Shmuel, in our battle with the Plishtim, we're called Ivri, and the other is in Yona. Two cases in Navi. In both cases, it's Jews conversing with Gaim. I believe amongst ourselves, we never call ourselves Ivri after that point. Amongst the Gaim, who look at us as a nation, amongst a family of nations, we say we're from this familial clan. Yonah speaking to shipmates, the Plishtim referred to us as Ivrim. That's my read of those cases in Navi. But even though it's only in Navi, in Chumash, after Yetzias Mitzrayim, now in the divine depiction of the Jewish people, only the Eved Ivri has reverted back to the state. And we've also really honed in on another clue of connection when the Eved leaves and he's given Hanukkah, he's given a present. The Torah says, give him a present, because remember you were an Eved in Mitzrayim. And Rashi states the obvious, just as he left Mitzrayim, Rechush Gadol, he needs a Rechush Gadol. Rashi compares the two gifts of leaving. So it's very clear from all of these clues of reference, the reemergence of the Pasuk in Gnei Yisrael Avada, the terminology Ivri, the Rechush Gadol, right? The Eved Ivri is re-experiencing Gaul's Gulos Mitzrayim, so Yovel is really introducing the Gaul's Gulos story again, both in terms of freeing the Eved from his personal Gaul's and then the return of the land, right? That's on a personal level. B'yas Haaretz. You have Yetzias Mitzrayim and B'yas Haaretz on a national level? Well, I'm suggesting the Yovel structure is Yetzias Mitzrayim and B'yas Haaretz on a personal level. The Eved Ivri that's leaving Mitzrayim, right? Set him free when it comes to Yovel, and then every Yid receives their land again. We've come to the land. So Shemitah and Yovel, I'm suggesting from a big picture perspective, is all about, as much as we are free from Mitzrayim, we reach Eretz Yisrael, we can regress. Right? We're home, but we're not home until Mashiach comes. We can regress. And Yovel is promising, Shemitah and Yovel is the promise, the rest, the utopia of Shabbos, reaching the land. There comes a time when, despite regression, you come home again. And this is why the mitzvah in this week's parasha, within the greater Yovel structure of redeeming a field, someone sells their field, redeem it before Yovel, you find it twice in Geula stories in Tanakh. The most obvious is Rus, as I said before. Rus, which is the story of the birth of Mashiach, occurs in the context of Boaz redeeming the field. But there's another example. In Sefer Yirmiyah, right? The promise of Geula from Galus Bavel is reflected in a story between Yirmiyah and Hananel. Next of kin redeeming a field shows Jews are going to come back to the land. What I'm pointing out is another clue of connection. Shemitah and Yovel returning to the land. It's all about returning to the land. It's all about Golas Geula. And I'm going to suggest it's not only about Golas and Geula geographically, politically, leaving Mitzrayim, returning to the land. It's also about Golas Geula Nafshis. Is it a coincidence that the Gemara Darshans, the halachas of Tekiah Shofar on Rosh Hashanah, from the shofar blowing during Yovel? First of all, is it a coincidence that Chalal is a shofar both every Rosh Hashanah and on Yom Kippur of Yovel, number one? The Gemara actually links them. Darshan's the halachas, and more than that, it's blown on Yom Kippur, right? And the terminologies, v'shav t'mishal huzasa v'shal mishpachta toshuvi, these are terms of tshuva, right? It's clear all of these coordinates together coalesce, returning to the land. A Yid comes back from slavery, he abdicates, his Yiddish reign is a Ben Chorin, he's gonna leave, he's gonna come home, right? We all come home spiritually, this is the Tshuva story. That's what Shemitah and Yovel are all about. And from this perspective, we understand the Ramban statement. The Ramban writes that while the weekly Shabbos commemorates the Shabbos of Ma'aseh Bereishis, the Shemitah and Yovel cycle is foreshadowing the Shabbos of Lasalam. The Shemitah and Yovel cycle, which is magnifying the 7 days into 7 years, or seven times 7 years, foreshadows there's an even greater multiplication of seven, and that's the 7,000 years, right? Finally, the world of Laos and Lavo. And Ramban makes a fascinating statement. He says, because after all, the world of Olam Haba is called Eretz Hachai. Eretz Hachai. Seems to be saying that observing Shemitah and Yovel in Eretz Yisrael, the physical Eretz Achayim, is some sort of symbol of the ultimate Eretz Achayim, Olam Haba. Eretz Yisrael represents Olam Haba, right? So returning to the land, and a Yid's portion of the land being returned to him, this foreshadows every Yid's going to make it ultimately to Olam Haba. I want to share with you now a delicious breakthrough. Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelk Lolam Haba. That statement is a hedge. what is the source site for Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelek Lomhav? In the end, every Yid's going to make it. As the Ramchal writes, some Yid, it's going to take a lot more Gilgulim, right? But the assumption is that almost every Yid's going to make it. Hashem, no Jew left behind. We might have complicated things for Hashem, so we made the process more circuitous. What's the pasuk which the Mishnah cites for Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelek Lomhav? Inheriting land with all the associations of Eretz Yisrael and the Yerusha Sa'aretz, and we left Mitzrayim, and Yerushu Aretz is Olam Haba, in a particular, the notion that every Yid's going to make it eventually, to me now, you know, light bugs in a garden, they're all flickering off, right? The references are flickering all over the place. This is a story, despite all deviations, right? Everyone's going to make it home eventually. The greater Geula story is going to happen despite derelictions. Shemitah Yovel is a chizak throughout. We're coming home. Hopefully it will happen this Yovel cycle, but if not, it's going to happen eventually. Eventually we're going to get there. I would suggest, if you really want to tease down this symbolism, in terms of returning the slaves on one hand during Yovel and returning plots in Eretz Yisrael on the other hand, and what that means in terms of the Mashal of Olam Haba, I would say it's like this. Some people have a chiluk in Olam Haba, but it's elusive, it's beyond, right? The Yid has to spend time in Gehenna. Most people have to spend Yom Beis Chodesh to purify themselves, a purification experience, right? So that's, in a certain sense, the Yid has a chelek in Eretz Yisrael, but he doesn't possess it right now. It's been sold to someone else. It's a question of time, right? And the promise that even if we're not there yet, right, it's not in our hands yet. We're going to get there. But then there's even a deeper problem. An Eved. The Eved Ivri, right? He hasn't just lost his land in Eretz Yisrael. It's much deeper than that. He's lost his very personhood. Right? As we said, to be a slave is in a certain sense not to be a Yid. It defies the essence of being a Yid. We are made Jews through Yetzias Mitzrayim. I'm going to suggest from an Olam Haba perspective, you know what that represents? Not simply someone who, of course, he has a huge chelek in Olam Haba, and it's just beyond him, it's not on his hands yet. Someone who it seems like he's not a Yid, he's not that person, right? Somebody who's deeply, deeply rachuk, right? And the notion that even such a person, as the Svarim HaKadoshim says, or Tzadik says, even a Yid who seemed to have totally severed, he said that Pintle Yid, which in Kabbalah is called Shar Nun, just as the 50 gates of the divine, the 50th relating to the divine existence itself, there's a 50th dimension, which is never broken. Klal Yisrael falls to Nentesha, I tell him, Zechar Tzadik. Hashem would have never let us fall to the 50th, because the 50th represents that dimension of a Yid which never can become defiled. It's who we are. Powerful now, as I go to Mitzrayim, the 50th could not be tainted. I'm going to suggest the other Ivrit. That's who he is. Not simply someone who's Olam Haba's beyond. Someone, he seemed to have become un-Jewish. Not just distant, elusive, his Olam Haba. He doesn't deserve Olam Haba. No. Right? As Yetzias Mitzrayim impressed upon us, there's a 50, I think, this is particularly powerful. Shar No. Which is particularly powerful vis-a-vis Yovel, which is connected to Shar No, as far as I'm saying. Right? We're going to get there eventually. Those of us who our chelik is not yet in our hands, and even those of us who seem so thoroughly defiled as though we've abdicated our birthright of being Jewish. That is the greater symbolism and the way the pieces come together regarding Shemitah and Yovel, but we go just one step further. In a certain sense, this idea of everyone making it in the end and coming home in Eretz Yisrael is really about things coming full circle, right? Again and again, Geula was supposed to happen pretty smoothly. And we keep backpedaling, right? Adam and Chava and Gan Eden, they were this close. And then later in Jewish history, we were this close. Egel Miraculum, right? It seems like we're always so close and we keep circling backwards. And there are always these adaptations. First it's supposed to be Adam, then Klal Yisrael become the new form. There are always these adaptations. But it's just that Shmita says that for all of the circuitous routes being taken, Hashem has always had a clear divine plan that he's never lost sight of. It's not a coincidence that Shemitah echoes of Shabbos Bereishis on one hand, the beginning, as Rashi says, V'shavos ha'aretz Shabbos Lashem, it's connected Shabbos Bereishis, and the Ramban saying it's connected the end game too. The Shabbos of the Bria and the Shabbos of Los Alava, Shemitah and Yovel is a linchpin of both. The beginning and the end come together. Whether it's a linear line as it could have been, or a more circuitous route as it has become, Shemitah's bringing out, right? Hashem never lost sight of the divine plan. This is a critical point. The Mekubalim say that as much as there's sometimes a long progression until Hashem's plan is realized, they talk about all the spheres. Hashem has a plan up here in Chachma. Until it happens, it has to go through Bam, Bina, Do, 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 Do. In the end, what's called Malchus, when the plan materializes in Malchus, they say in Malchus, it's always clear, the original plan happened exactly. And don't think there was any sort of mutation. Right? You see, Malchus, as much as it's the last sphere, is actually connected to the highest sphere, Chachma, and so on. And I'm going to suggest that's why Malchus, which is the number 7 sphere, right? This whole discussion regarding Shabbos and the different Shabbos of Maaseh Bereishis, Shabbos of Los Alamos, Shemitah, these 7s are all about how it ends. Are really pointing to the beginning. And this is a critical point. I'm thinking about Hasidish story. This is a piece of Hasidish history, which is well known. I was zeicha to hear the articulation of this Hasidish piece of history from Rebbe Weinzatzal in his inimitable way. He was talking about the evolution of the Hasidish movement, particularly in Poland. There were some of the early Polish rabbis. He put it, they really rebelled. He called it a rebellion, a revolution. I don't know if in Hasidic quarters they would embrace that term. He called it a revolution, a rebellion. They felt, the Kotzker, the Peshechta, right? They felt that the original Kabbalistic model of the Polsha was created a very idealistic world in which Yidden were going to connect to Hashem through Kabbalistic concepts. And most people are struggling with basic human foibles, right? Kotzker certainly with his biting wit. Yeah? Don't talk to me about Sviris and Olamos. Talk to me about Emes, Sheker, right? So they created some changes in focus. And the way Rabbi Warren explained it, I know this is discussed in Hasidic literature. He's just my conduit. I'm trusting him in the history. He said there was a large wedding, a rabbinical wedding, because when people would get together after, right, it wasn't the Sima Shas, right? People get together because Rebbe Shachasimus. And he said the Ayin Yisrael from the Akhtar Rav was there. He was the only Zakane of the old school. Yeah? And he, Rebbe Wein said, he called some of the young upstarts in front of him, some of these young Polish Rebbes who were trying to kind of remake Hasidus. And he said, the Ohr Yisrael stared at them, and he said, I'll tell you a mashal. There was a carriage traveling on the main road. But then there was some sort of traffic, there was some sort of stoppage in the road, so we had to go on a detour. And then, this is before Waze, they thought, let's make another curve. Let's make a detour on a detour. He said, no, you can't have a detour on a detour. So if you make too many detours, you're never going to make it back to the main highway. He said, there was a straight way of being Oyvet Hashem, like we did throughout Klal Yisrael's Masada. The Baal Shem was articulating a new path, right? Because there was a stoppage. You know, we're not making it up to Hashem. However each person is going to conceptualize why it wasn't working, the system wasn't working. The Baal Shem understood there's this need for a detour to reach Hashem. He said, but you're trying to create a mutation within the mutation. right? Neo-Hasidus 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, 5.0. I'm not getting involved in modern Neo. I'm not wading into it. It's not for greater people than myself to make quality soul decisions. He says, you have too many 2.0. We're never going to make it back to the mainline. So I'm thinking in this regard, as Kaliyasral develops, there could be this concern, right? That we keep mutating new Gauls and new Gaulas, new plans, and all these Yisrael type of thoughts develop, right? Have we lost sight, has Hashem lost sight of the original plan? I'm suggesting Shemitah and Yovel is creating an echo through time, that as many times as we've had to mutate, as many Neo-Hasidus and Neo-whatevers as there had to be for a new Gaula story to happen, right? In the end, it's gonna be clear. It's that same product Hashem wanted all along. The Shabbos at the end is echoing on the Shabbos in the beginning because there's a linchpin Shabbos in the middle. That every 50 years, Hashem matures and echoes. I haven't lost sight of this. It's happening, it's happening, it's happening. And the beginning will echo of the end. And that, I want to suggest, is the symbolism of even the Pratim in Seret Sinai. If the general claw of Shemitah was Seret Har Sinai, yeah. But the details come later. You could think, yeah, the grand plan of Shemitah and Geulah was ancient. But the details, the how it materializes, that mutates in time, with time. Albeit it's a divine mutation. But you'll say, you see? Yeah, Hashem is a big Yom Shekul Shabbos plan. Yet the details came later, right? Hashem kind of, you know, he changes the script. And the symbolism of the Pratim being said from Sinai is Hashem said, I am being mindful of the devil and the details of this great plan of Geulah from the get-go. And I'm suggesting it's specifically Shemitah, which is all about the echoing through time, how the end, the Sof Maisa B'Machshava Tchila, right? From the get-go, from the first Shabbos, he was mindful of the Yom Shekul Shabbos and Yuch at the end, and Shemitah's linking that. That's the idea of the prophet being set from Sinai, the devil, and the details in the beginning. Yes, Midrashically, this is true of all of Torah, right? All of them, the prophet are set from Sinai. All of them, everything going on in Yiddishkeit, right? Hashem has been on top of the whole master plan all along, and there are no mutations and so on. Even the seeming detours in the road, there's this divine way system which is on top of all of the contingencies, and everything is working out perfectly and beautifully, right? The example in the text of this is Shemitah and Yovel, because Shemitah and Yovel epitomizes the idea of the grand master plan of the beginning materializing at the end. Here's where I'll give my Lag BaOmer picture, this holy day of Lag BaOmer. Mm-hmm. Lag BaOmer certainly, as interpreted in Sefer Chassidus, has a lot to do with how the light of Pnimius HaTorah, which inspires Nudracha, pulls Yidden from unexpected places. And many of the Pnimius HaTorah, different movements, whether Chassidus or whether others, have a neo-characteristic to them, which is, of course, why they invite a lot of snagged as a controversy, which they have. It's that push and pull between the new and the old that ensures, right? Klal Yisrael, and there's a human cost. There's a human cost that people, Nabuch, there's a human cost, but the push and the pull is kind of what ensures that we remain on that Derech HaYashar. We're going to remain on that Derech HaYashar. It's the same Torah. There are deeper layers. There are deeper dimensions this thing is telling us, which come to be revealed specifically through the Golos. Right? May we all be zocha to see in our own personal lives how even the detours, which weren't so pretty, in the end of the day, when we're on the main highway again, everything comes together with a sense of perfection. It was just a process to get there. And as long as at the end of the day there's perfection and its original mission accomplished, we could accept the many detours that had to happen until we get there. I've never heard anyone complain about their journeys in life and their aliyos v'yeridos in the end when they're where they need to be, right? We only complain along the way. So may we all be zocha to reach that final Shabbos Haaretz LaHashem when we will realize how even the pratim, the devil in the details, were all from Sinai. Thank you very much. Afreil Tov.